From Cumbria, I'm back in England, and it's a beautiful day here in the country. As I look around, I can see mountains on one side of me and behind me, and on the other side, there's, I wouldn't call it wildlife, unless sheep are wild, but sheep. I'm looking at some rheas, ostrich-like birds strutting around. There are donkeys over there, there are chickens, there's a rooster, foxes, all kinds of interesting things. Well, to get a close-up look, I brought my binoculars. Yes, that's good for looking at the mountains, and in the Lake District, there's a lot to see with these, but it's also great for close up. For example, this morning, our dog barked five-ish, and I got up to let her out, and I noticed, because the sun had been up for a while, that there were more lambs than there were last night. One of the pregnant sheep had given birth, and so I zoomed in, and I got a really good look at these very cute newborns frolicking around. Very impressive how quickly they walk and they can even run. But what the binoculars cannot do is see through the mountain or see 1,000 miles away. I'm quite limited in what I can see. Now, as we talk about the prophet Joel, we'll be talking about vision, not vision in the American individualistic sense of having a purpose for your life. That's not actually a biblical concept. Faith is, I'll go with faith. But we're going to be talking about prophetic vision, and particularly three different levels of the day of the Lord. I'll explain this in just a moment. But the title of this message, iFaith 116, is Babylon, Jerusalem, and London. And we'll see how Joel's words are fulfilled in three different ways, three different levels, you could say, three different locations. So first we read in chapter 1, "Summon the elders and all who live in the land to the house of the Lord your God, and cry out to the Lord, alas for that day, for the day of the Lord is near. It will come like destruction from the Almighty." Now, what I'm doing here, as I do in many of my talks, is I telescope. You know, I'll read several sentences together, and you may not always know that there's a gap in between, but that's just to keep things compact. But what happens is that there is a summons, firstly to Joel to give a message, and then through him, God is summoning the elders, that is, those responsible, just as in the modern church, the elders are the ones who are responsible. So in ancient Israel, the elders were summoned, and there was a warning that the day of the Lord is near, and it's not something good. This concept would be familiar from Amos and other prophetic books. Amos spoke long before Joel. Joel speaking in the late 500s or early 500s, that is, before the destruction by Babylon in 587, Amos is speaking in the 700s, you know, in the 8th century BC. But that concept of the day of the Lord would be familiar. There's not necessarily just one day of the Lord, and fulfillment occurs on different levels. And if I can communicate this concept to you, I think you'll understand Joel, you'll better understand the book of Acts and the Christian faith, and I think it'll maybe even clear up some difficulties or confusion that you may have had about parts of the Bible, because some parts are hard to understand. Now, let's go to chapter 2, and I'm going to read something from the beginning of the chapter and then something else from the end. But at the beginning of the chapter will be, this is what I'm calling level 1, Day of the Lord. "Blow the trumpet in Zion. Sound the alarm on my holy hill. Let all who live in the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. It is close at hand. A day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and blackness, like dawn spreading across the mountains. A large and mighty army is coming. Before them, fire devours. Behind them, a flame blazes. Before them, the lands like the Garden of Eden. Behind them, a desert waste. Nothing escapes them. They have the appearance of horses. They gallop like cavalry. They charge like warriors. They scale walls like soldiers. Before them, the earth shakes. The heavens tremble. The sun and moon are darkened, and the stars no longer shine. The Lord thunders at the head of his army. His forces are beyond number, and mighty is the army that obeys his command. The day of the Lord is great. It is dreadful. Who can endure it?" There's so much imagery here. Yes, it's the coming of an army, but it's more than that. It has cosmic significance. You have the sun and moon darkening. Not literally. Sometimes they do, like an eclipse. In fact, here, last night, there was an eclipse. The moon turned red. But not surprisingly, that kind of imagery from weather and strange phenomena, is often used in apocalyptic passages. But what's going on here? He's comparing the approach of this destroying army to a locust plague that kind of burns through the land. It strips everything. All the vegetation is stripped, all the leaves off the tree. And that's something people are familiar with in that part of the world. So there's a comparison of the army to a locust plague, but also you have these cosmic things thrown in, the sun and the moon and the stars. But what he's talking about here, I can assure you, is level one. Yes, it's apocalyptic imagery, like Revelation 9, but normally apocalypse has something to do with the present, not just the distant future. And so the advancing army is compared to a locust plague that darkens the skies, and no one can endure it. This is not good news. And Joel is going to blow the trumpet, just like Ezekiel. He's going to sound the alarm. Now, that's close up, middle distance. And then at the end, we'll look at the greater distance, way beyond anyone's horizon. But in the middle distance, we read at the end of this chapter, "Afterward, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. I will show wonders in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." Are you a Christian? Have you been a Christian long enough to have read the book of Acts and are familiar with the Peter's message in Acts 2? It's the birthday of the church, and amazing things are happening. And he says, Joel prophesied what would happen in the last days. That is, the day of the Lord, level 2. And as Peter said, this is it. The Spirit's being poured out. Now, literally, what was happening? Did the moon start dripping blood? Was the sun put out? Was there fire everywhere? No, these are images. They're stock imagery for apocalyptic passages. But what's he referring to? Okay, he's quoting Joel. Now, Joel certainly didn't know that his message related to Pentecost. Joel was more concerned with the sorry state of Israel and the approach of Babylon, which would destroy Judah and Jerusalem. No, but the application here is a few centuries later on. And this is the Pentecost passage. Pentecost is a sort of judgment day. Well, think about it. All the prophets through all the centuries warning God's people to turn. The prophets telling them that if you don't, then the curses in the Torah will come true. I'll begin over. There'll be a new covenant. Enough is enough. And it is a kind of judgment day. Some people see an additional 40 years grace period. I'm not so sure about that. That is, between the year 30, Pentecost, and 70, when Rome destroyed Jerusalem, maybe there's another 40 years where the Jewish people can repent. But I don't really know how to prove that. I'm not so sure. But this refers to Pentecost. So what I read before, at the beginning of chapter 2, we have the nation summoned to battle, but actually for judgment, and this is going to be something that happens in the foreseeable future. But here, we're talking about Pentecost. And it says that all will prophesy. All will prophesy, men and women. All will see visions. Because in Numbers 12, the prophet has a vision. God gives him a miraculous vision, and he sees something, and he or she reports that accurately and applies it. Now, let's continue to our last passage. I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. I will sit to judge all the nations on every side. Swing the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come trample the grapes, for the winepress is full and the vats overflow. So great is their wickedness. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and moon will be darkened, the stars no longer shine. The Lord will roar from Zion and thunder from Jerusalem. The earth and heavens will tremble, but the Lord will be a refuge for his people, a stronghold for the people of Israel. Then you will know that I, the Lord your God, dwell in Zion, my holy hill. Now, if you noticed, the language is similar. Again, You have the darkening of the moon and sun and the stars, which is an imagery of judgment. It's like everything's getting dark. Things aren't looking good. Things are not very bright. It's a figurative thing. And you have the heavens trembling, the earth trembling. And you have this phrase, the day of the Lord. And yet here, it's not just for Israel. It's for all nations. This points towards the judgment day. So we've got three levels. We have judgment on Israel herself, which happens not just in, I should say, Judah, because northern Israel is gone. That happens through the Babylonians. That's the Babylon part of the message. Then there's judgment that comes to Jerusalem at the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2. But then there's a third kind of judgment, and that's when the Lord himself returns. Jesus comes, the second coming, and that will be the judgment day. So you can see how these things are all connected. And for a prophet like Joel, he had a pretty good image, pretty good understanding of what was happening with Babylon. For him to see farther, say, to Pentecost, being familiar with the earlier prophets, he might have worked out some of that, but not very much. But ultimately, to understand Jesus and the judgment day would have been very difficult. That's the level three. And for that, we need the Bible just as surely as I need this if I'm going to see with any great clarity at any distance. I like the way one theologian put it. In developing this theme, and think of the theme of the day of the Lord on these three levels, Joel's vision and words have an elastic capacity, stretching the normal constraints of time so that the present, the immediate future, and the distant future are all condensed as if contained within a small capsule of time. That's telescoping. It's also compared sometimes to looking at hills. When my wife and I had our honeymoon, we lived in England, and we got some cheap flights to Switzerland, and we did a lot of walking in the hills, kind of like The Sound of Music. And we'd be walking up one hill, and we wouldn't realize there's another hill behind it. But if you got up at a certain height, you could see a procession of hills, but you didn't realize the distance involved and how you go up and down and up and down. So things are condensed, things are telescoped, and that's a very common feature of the prophet. So what is the application here? Well, between the present, Pentecost onwards, and the end when the Lord returns, we need to all take Judgment Day seriously. All of us should not just believe it's going to happen. All of us should prophesy. Whatever that means. Now, I'm not talking about something that's necessarily miraculous, not in the sense that we may think of New Testament apostles and prophets, but a mark of the new covenant is that everyone has the Spirit, and as Peter says in Acts 2, men and women, everyone will be speaking the word of the Lord. I love that. You know, in Revelation 19:10, we read that the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. And to be honest, it's a passage I'm still trying to understand. But holding on, bearing witness to Jesus, letting the world know, is God giving that final warning and through you and me as his sons and daughters. And the vision that is referred to in Joel 2 and Acts 2, again, it's not about a vision for our life, like we need to feel better about ourselves or have a plan. No. It's a vision about him, about his will, and about being serious, because the clouds may not look so dark right now, but the storm is definitely coming, and we should believe that. So let's be serious about the day of the Lord.